This is an Enterprise Time Security podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Jonathan Bathurst from Lockheed Martin.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me. My name is Jonathan Bathurst. I'm a relatively new joiner to Lockheed Martin. I'm in the Cyber Solutions division.
Let's talk about Lockheed Martin for a second. What is it that you deliver?
Within the Cyber Solutions division, we are skilled practitioners in information assurance, software engineering, program and project management come with it. Legacy is built from obviously major programs that we do within the defense industry around jets. They all need to be secure vehicles now. They all carry phenomenal amounts of data that needs to be secured. So it's inbuilt into all that we do, but we also want to leverage those skills and take it to a broader segment of government, not just defense and intelligence. We want to go wider than those areas.
One of the interesting things with defense in particular is that it has very tight engineering specifications and requirements. If we translate that into the corporate space, companies are often chasing the next edge over the competition, and engineering isn't always top of the agenda. How do we get companies to align engineering with what they're doing on a commercial space?
With any new design that we would ask our engineers to look at, security has to be built in right from the beginning. There was a very good thread this morning, Track 4, when they were looking at the closeness between health and safety and security, and how if you can build that in right at the front, which is everybody's aspiration, rather than think, actually, you know what, we'll look at that halfway down a path, you can actually, one, achieve a product that's ready to be deployed quicker. Two, it's secure from the word go. Three, you have less failed programs, if you like, or delayed programs. So it allows both customer and, in our case, government to actually get the best value for their tax spend with us. If I compare that to the commercial world has taken agile delivery. They've taken the succeed fast ethos to heart, and they're doing it very well. Government is absolutely trying to get on that bandwagon. But some of the older habits haven't quite died off just yet. There's still a transition, I believe, between how projects should be delivered and then how projects should be bought. I think there's a challenge within the commercial environments. There is always a view of getting the best value for the taxpayer, and we absolutely recognise that. And so we will always work with government in doing that. NCSE, if you look at the multiple programmes that they have, we want to be absolutely aligned to all of those, plus the big headline of making the UK the best place and the most secure place to do business in.
With Agile, the advantage of being able to fail fast and reset your project as great when you're trying to get a commercial edge. We've talked in the commercial world for over 15 years now about baking in security from the start. The reality, however, is that the two don't marry up in many, many projects for organizations, because that first step of having a security infrastructure, security architecture, of doing that validation isn't a natural thing for a lot of software IT departments. How do we reset the expectation and, more importantly, the discipline?
There are a number of regulatory requirements that are coming in now that will certainly focus the mind when you look at the potential fines companies get for the mismanagement of data. So GDPR is absolutely one of them, but there are many other areas where you can look at the loss of data. It's not just GDPR, but actually individuals will come after you as well. So if companies don't build it in early enough, they could fall foul of that, and companies have a tendency to respond well when they're going to get hit in the pocket. Two, the security industry as a whole is still forming. It's still evolving. Talking before we came on the podcast, when you look at actually how education and the skills that we need to come from universities, and also the awareness that children growing up, I have teenagers, their use of social media and how that has changed the more they've understood the threat, they will start turning applications off because they actually don't trust the application. And what are they going to be doing with that, my data? You will start to see an evolution. Again, companies will be hit in the pocket because users will start to turn it off. But if you have a culture through all the children and the universities and those coming straight into the workplace of not trusting and being a little bit suspicious of where things come, you will then hopefully start to see all of these behaviors change, and security is built in right at the beginning. I've got a cracking idea. Here is the idea. I think there's a market for it. Great. How do I secure it? And then you go into development.
Now, DevOps has given us an opportunity to do that from the start. when we build our pipelines for DevOps, we can actually make sure we have the correct iterations for testing. We can have the correct iterations for security validation. We can automate a lot of that, but we can also build in steps where we've got to stop, check, and sign off. Are you seeing enough organizations taking the opportunity to use that? Or again, are we early in the cycle and we need a bit more maturity?
My market expertise is government. I'm certainly seeing that in government, absolutely. Commercially, there would be few major brands that would not be adhering to those guidelines that you laid out. However, there may be some that would be willing to take a risk, but they'd only do it once. I would be really surprised now if people weren't taking shortcuts. It's just not a valid approach now. We're all abundantly aware, the media is aware, and I think we've also got to be careful about how the next big WannaCry is reported. It can't be an explosion because this is happening the whole time. It's not something that you want to see peaks and troughs in. It's a constant state. There will always be threats, so we shouldn't overreact. That doesn't mean that we turn down what we do. We absolutely keep turning it up, but in a controlled way.
That controlled way for a lot of organizations in terms of bringing it into their processes and for government to bring it into those processes does rely on threat intelligence and other information that can be trusted. At the moment, a lot of the attribution we see to attacks tends to be on partial information, on the belief that it looks similar to something that's been seen before, rather than there be more accurate ways of defining the data. There's a risk, therefore, that a lot of that can be ignored or that a false narrative starts to occur. And that false narrative causes a problem for cyber defenders, and it causes a problem when you're trying to present to a board as to what our risk is. Where are we in starting to put a better level of trust into the narrative of where attacks come from?
If we're running on a scale of 0 to 10, and 10 being absolute certainty, we know every time we see a threat, we can go, bam, we know it's a threat. 5, I would say. But we're getting a lot better, and we're getting better faster. You will have seen a number of tool providers out there. There are a number of service providers out there as well. And I think the optimum is to get them to work together. It is an education of companies. A lot of companies readily hire security professionals and then think, I have no idea how to measure how successful they've been or not. I've invested lots. And then the company and those that have joined the company said, yeah, but how are you going to continue to train me? Mm-hmm. Oh, really? I've got to continue to train you. But I thought you knew it. There's that constant understanding that we are never 100% safe. We are going to constantly have to invest in skilled staff and in unskilled staff. We're going to constantly have to do it. Are the tools and are the people getting better? Yes, we definitely are. I will look at our own internal organization. I would say it's world class, absolutely world class. But we lose them and we gain them. We're pretty confident that when we see something, we know what the steps are to mitigate that. So we're pretty good at that. And I know we're probably at the top of the tree, but others are catching up. Others know what we do, and we can advise and let them learn from what we do. A lot of the tools we use are also open source, so they can use a lot of those tools too. They can gain from our knowledge as well. It's a benefit for us that the more people that are out there, because there's a community that I know of, that the analysts are absolutely on top of this, and they have their own internal networks too. It's not all formal. There are still people picking up the phone saying, you need to look out for this, which is great because they've got the trust. But that community is getting bigger and bigger, but it's still evolving and it will still get bigger and bigger.
That issue of education and of learning constantly on the job is becoming challenging because the attacks are evolving faster than we can evolve education. And it's not helped by a shortage of people, so that most organizations are firefighting. They're not actually in a position where they're putting in stable environments and they're able to build on it. We struggle at the moment to get new people in. And part of that is, as a newish industry, there's almost an overemphasis on the requirements for a degree and a security certification before people are considered for the role. How do we begin to reset that expectation? Because actually, this isn't just about security. This is about soft skills. It's about people skills. It's about the ability to do something, not necessarily always in a formal way.
At the age of 15, 16, you won't get many individuals say, do you know what, I want to be the top tax practitioner in the country. But somehow we don't seem to struggle for those that will advise companies on the best way to manage their taxes. The big four do it really well. Consultancies do it really well. What is it that they have that I don't think we have yet in the security world is a really solid structure that individuals can follow, whether it is with a degree or without a degree. But these are the steps. And by the way, you as a company, we as a company, which should be able to give you a clear, defined career path. But again, I will use the Big Four as an example. I spent 4 years of my life there. They absolutely know what they're going to be doing with their employees when they come in, whether it's as an apprentice or whether it's as a graduate. They know where they're going to go for at least the first 3 years. I think we need to offer that type of structure, and that's all types of organizations, whether it's defense companies like ours, whether it's the financial institutions. A lot of them do it, but it feels to me like it's not an agreed structure yet.
But if we look at the Big Four and take tax as an example, that's a long-standing process that they've got. They've got a template they've built over decades, even centuries. Cybersecurity isn't an old industry. In fact, if we look at IT, IT still doesn't necessarily, in a lot of organizations, have a structured career path for individuals. How do we get the board? How do we get human resources? How do we get team leaders to understand how they're going to bring people in and advance them through the organization without the risk, which is what they see, of give them some training and they'll get a better paid job elsewhere?
The Deputy Governor of the Bank of England this morning spoke really clearly about getting the message right for the board. That's absolutely got to be done. And there's an awareness that those that have been traditionally in the IT department or the security department have got to be comfortable in being called out to present to the board. So that's at the top level. There's still an investment in the security people to actually be better communicators. That translator, I absolutely resonated with me. I thought that was a brilliant description. You need that translator. And that is actually a really valid role. And it's not one that you just do it for a year and then move on. There's a proper career that you could actually have and get to a senior level with it. But what are those steps? So we need to demonstrate and show what those steps are. I think I would like to see the various bodies that are out there that say that information assurance is at the heart of what they do. Are they all working together? Are they all tied in? Is the goal the same? Are the structures the same? Right now, I don't think they are, but I think there's an opportunity to get them absolutely aligned. I really do. And then I think the universities have a place to play in that. But it's not just graduates that we want to see. We want to see those that have got that spark of interest. So if somebody at the age of 18 has said, you know, I love STEM, but I can't afford student debt. I don't want that. And actually, not whether I can't afford it. I just don't want it. Can I go and get an apprenticeship? Absolutely. We can. So people can start to be offered apprenticeships with this.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we've struggled for the last 15, 20 years to have the conversation about apprenticeships in this country. And now with cyber, we're starting to see the role of the apprentice coming back into favour again, because people are realising that this isn't something you learn out of a book. It takes time, it takes effort, it takes input from everybody to make this happen. But do many companies truly want to invest in apprenticeships?
I think they do. Yes, but I'm also speaking from a company that is large, and we know that we've actually got to appeal to a broader swathe of the community. We will need apprentices. We will need graduates. I want that mix. But we're big enough to say that we can accommodate both. To an SME that's got 20 people, that's a different challenge. But I also think that SME that's got 20 people has a very difficult decision in the IT security space anyway, because they've got the choice of security software, security hardware, managed security services, and get security insurance and a security assurance. How much do they need of each one of those? And what's that going to cost them? Because all they want to do is sell steel or whatever it is that they do for their 20 people. That's all they want to concentrate on. As an industry, we've got to help educate the SME. I think the NCSE has done a really good job on that. Is there a 20-man organisation that's going to need an IT manager or an IT doer? I'm not sure now, because everybody says it's all in the cloud, it's so easy to do. But should they then buy a day of a security expert once a week or once a month or something that actually does come in and do those reviews? Yes, I think that would probably be the right way to do it.
Interestingly, the SMEs have always relied upon the dealer from whom they bought their equipment. Those dealers, just like the SMEs, struggle to obtain and retain skilled security staff. They often don't have enough customers to be paying somebody far more than a sales team in order to be able to offer those services forward. It's meant a lot of SMEs just giving everything into the cloud. And there's almost a general acceptance that if I put it in the cloud, it's no longer my responsibility.
And if I pay the insurance premium, thus I'm fine.
Of course, the reality is that you are still responsible. So how do we find a way to educate the SMEs into what their responsibility is, irrespective of where they've put it, so that when they make those decisions, they A, make an informed decision, but B, make a decision based on reality rather than abdication?
If I look at what the NCSE do, there's an organisation called IASME, Dr. Emma Philpott that runs that organisation. They're starting to educate all SMEs about the risks of not doing this properly. I've mentioned this a couple of times about being hurt in the pocket. If SMEs are hurt in the pocket, they will react, but sometimes that might be too late for some. So they've got to do it, and then the actual risk element is understood. It is also, by taking out an insurance policy, is not the be-all and end-all. If you take out a home contents insurance, you don't just stop at that, do you? You actually put other elements of defence into protecting your goods. The cyber threat should be seen in exactly the same way. Just because you've done one thing doesn't mean you switch off and then come back a year later and do it again. This is a constant. Everybody's aware of it. When we lock our car, the burglar alarm goes off, the doors are locked, everything's safe, you try and hide things from the back seat. This is exactly the same for an SME. But where NCSE, again, I reference them and the messages they push out, asking people to do the basic, the cyber essentials, follow those 10 steps, 90% of the time you're going to have done the right thing for protecting your IT infrastructure and thus your data and your customers' data and your suppliers' data.
But getting people to do those steps on a regular basis is hard. People walk through a series of steps, they get to the last step and, well, it's done, and they walk away. How do we persuade people that they have to rethink this, that this is a continual iterative process rather than do once, walk away?
It's a very good question. This is the big battle. How does a company survive? It continues to sell. It continues to make. If you actually risk stopping either of those activities, you will address that. And it's not necessarily the fear factor, it's an inconvenience factor. It's, hang on, I've lost a week's worth of production. That's going to cost most companies. You know, that's straight from the bottom line. So you've got to ensure that they understand that is the risk. The more everything is connected, that is the risk. We don't want to stop you doing it because it's still, the benefits are huge. But you've got to accept that you're taking a risk. It is that risk management element that every company does it subconsciously, whether it's a formal program or whatever. There's a subconscious decision that, you know what, I'm actually not going to give that chap a pay rise because he hasn't done it. But, you know, and if he goes in the following year, he goes. I'm willing to take that risk. But it's a conscious decision, whether it's written down or not. But there are lots of examples that companies, individuals in an SME will be making, whether it's a formal process or not. If you're asking, how do you formalize it? I'm not going to say you should add it onto the auditor's report because government has been fighting that for many a year. However, I am fully aware that it is now a component of it. So people need to be comfortable that the data that is in their financial systems has been properly protected, that nobody's gone in and changed things, so you know what's happened to them. That's an element of what we're trying to protect here. It becomes part of the psyche. But it's not telling you how do you tell the 20-man company that this is absolutely what you've got to do. I think it really is accepting the risk and then being fully aware of the risk. And the NCSE industry, whether it's NCC, whether it's Amazon, come and use my services. Absolutely. If you're Amazon, come and use the services. And I will give you the reassurance of how secure we are. Because if they're not asking that question, that company's not aware. One of the big strengths that Amazon have is when they promote their services, it's available and it's secure. They know those are the questions they're going to be asked.
I think it's going to be interesting to see how SMEs evolve over the next few years.
It will be.
Jonathan, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ian. Thank you very much.